This is the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo, episode 145.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Alex is ready to answer your questions and provide you with the tools you need to succeed in real estate, all through case studies, current real-life transactions, and proven marketing strategies. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey, how's it going there? And I got a couple of questions I want to fire away to you, and I want to answer them here on this particular episode, kind of getting back to the whole Q&A theme here. And so let me just give me a quick second. All right. So first of all, I'm getting a lot of great questions with the members in the Inner Circle program. And so there's a couple of them that were asked on our last members only Q&A call that I want to highlight here for you, because I think, you might have a similar question, or you might have the same question. So a couple of these are going to be pretty quick to answer. And then there's one in particular that that might take me a little bit more, but I want to talk about it on today's episode. So one of the questions was, Alex, do you use a call center for after hours, or do your calls go to voicemail? Fantastic question. So let me give you a little bit of a backstory here. So, you know, for years, we were driving our calls to a 24-hour recorded voicemail. And I think in a different market, you know, years ago, that was probably working okay. Although I think back and I wonder how many deals we lost doing that. And we would always make sure to call and follow up with the hangups, which my experience, the majority are going to be hangups, probably 60 to 70%. At least here in our market, were hangups, and maybe 20-30% of those people, left voicemails. Did I say 60 to 70? So yeah, 30 to 40% of the people maybe left voicemails. And that sounds pretty ambitious now that I think about it. So, but we would always call the hangups, and we were doing deals from hangups. And then I want to say at some point about a year and a half ago, maybe a year ago, we switched to a call recording, a call center. Right, that we would give them a script, and you know, this is my second go around going with a call center, and it was a complete and utter failure. You know, we would call, and it would take like 4 or 5 rings for them to pick up, and that was like on a good day, and then it just sounded like a call center. It was, you know, it was just somebody. It sounded like a robot asking the person questions, like no attempt to build motivation. Like the person could say, you know, oh, you know, I had a death in the family, you know, I just inherited this property, it's caused a lot of stress. And, you know, instead of like showing empathy and building rapport, the person would just be like, okay, and were you hoping to sell in the next third? Like, you know what I mean? I was just like, okay, this was a big fail. Let's move on. And we started taking calls live. So I have 2 acquisitions managers. And so the way that we set it up in CallRail initially was that, and this was supposed to be a short answer, go figure. But the way I set it up in CallRail was that it would ring on my first acquisitions manager's cell phone for 3 rings. And then if he didn't pick up after the 3 rings, it would go to my second acquisition manager and ring 4 through 4, 5, and 6. And then if neither of them picked up, which didn't happen very often, but if neither of them picked up, then it went to a voicemail. And then I realized that I didn't really like that. And so I switched so that now CallRail, it'll ring on both my acquisition manager's cell phones for up to 5 rings. And 90% of the time, one of them pick it up live. If they happen to both be tied up, then it'll go to a voice recording. So that's how we have it set up. We could do it. I've just had a bad experience with call centers personally, but I'm sure there's some good ones out there. So yeah, after hours, if somebody calls like at 1, 2, 3 in the morning, something like that, for the most part, it's going to a voicemail. And then I've just trained our acquisitions team that, you know, pick up the call live. So they need to be shooting for like 90%. As far as picking up live. And if they can't pick up live, or it's a missed call and it goes to the voicemail, call back like ASAP. I'm telling you, like every hour that passes, you're getting further and further away from probably being able to connect with that person. So anyway, hopefully that answers that question. Okay, what do we got here? Next question. How does your acquisitions team come up with a purchase price? Do they run it by you or someone else? What happens if they get a property under contract for more than they should have it? Do you just try to renegotiate it? And if that doesn't work, cancel the contract? Great question. So, and this speaks to a larger issue that I've had in the past, and you know, we still haven't fully eliminated it, but you got to look at your business and find out where the bottleneck's happening. Okay. And this is a question that points to a potential bottleneck. So if you have a virtual assistant or an acquisitions person that relies on you to get answers or to get answers to questions, right? Like if they have to run it by you as to what they need to be buying the property at, or if they have to run the comps by you because they're not sure, that's a bottleneck. That means that they can't move forward without getting your input. That's an issue. Bottlenecks suck. You got to eliminate the bottlenecks. And that sounds very obvious, but I bet you if you were to like look at your business and find out where the bottlenecks are, or find out where you're involved, you're going to see that there's a bottleneck there, right? So in other words, if a question or a decision has to run by you or somebody else before it can move forward, that's a potential issue and a potential bottleneck, right? And so every now and then, I'll have my acquisitions manager come to me to get my input on something. And it used to happen more frequently when, you know, they initially came on board, but very rarely does it happen now. Matter of fact, the way that we do it is acquisitions and sales, those two departments need to be lock and step, right? Or lockstep. What's that saying? They need to basically operate on the same heartbeat. And so sometimes my acquisitions rep will contact my sales guy, who's awesome. And he'll say, hey, you know, here's a kind of a unique situation because there's no comps or because the zoning is different. You know, do we have buyers for this? And kind of what's your, here, what the comps are showing me, what do you think? And so, yeah, that happens sometimes. But no, to answer the question, the acquisitions manager doesn't have to come to me to come up with a purchase price. You know, if you've trained them well, they should be able to figure that out on their own. Now, yeah, every now and then they might need to bounce something off of you, and that's okay. You know, obviously you want to, you know, I'm not telling you not to help your team or to not answer their questions, because I try to foster, you know, that we're all here to help each other out. But there's a fine line there. You know, you don't want somebody relying on somebody else on the team, or even worse, relying on you to get answers that they need in order to do their job. So no, I don't have my acquisitions reps come to me to decide on a purchase price. They've been trained that they need to know based on the comps, based on the area, based on a lot of different factors. They need to know, you know, what they should be buying it at. And same thing on the sales side. You know, every now and then we'll kind of have a quick discussion about where we should price a property at, but you know, he's got just the freedom to price properties at what he thinks based on, you know, the property, the situation, the area, just so many different factors, right? And then the second part of the question is, what happens if they got a property under contract for more than they should have it for? Yeah, you know, look, this is going to happen sometimes. You try to limit how often it happens, and if it's happening often, that's an issue. You know, you don't know your numbers, or you're just not underwriting the deal properly. You're not analyzing it correctly. But every now and then, you know, you're going to kind of miss on one, and you're going to overprice it, or you're going to pay too much. Yeah, in a case like that, you go back and you renegotiate with the seller. I did an episode on how to renegotiate with a seller. And if you go to the Flip Empire site and you use the search bar, which is actually pretty good. Let me just go there now because I was looking somewhere else. If you use the search, let me see. Yeah, it didn't come up for me. I did an episode. I wish I could. I'll include it in the show notes. I'm not sure why it's not coming up, but I did an episode on how you can renegotiate with the seller. And you know what the problem is? I don't think I used the word renegotiate in the headline of that episode. And so that's probably why I can't find it. But I did an episode. If you search back, you should be able to find it on how to renegotiate with the seller. So I would recommend you listen to that. And that would be the way that I would go back to renegotiate the price. And, you know, one of the things I always like to do, and I have my sales guys do, is whenever you're selling a property, if you can't sell it and you're getting feedback that it's priced too high, always have them ask your buyers, look, I understand this price doesn't work for you. Where would you need to be at for this one to make sense? And you're collecting valuable data here. They're basically telling you where they have to be. And if you're hearing the same ballpark from several different buyers, now you know that if you go back to that seller and you get it at that price, you're going to make a profit, or get it at a lower price, you're going to make a profit. You know, so if you're marketing a deal for 169.9, let's say, but you're getting feedback from buyers, hey, I probably need to be at like 145, 150. Now you know that when you go back to your seller, you're probably going to need to be in that, you know, 120, 130 range for you to make the deal make sense for you, right? Or maybe even 140 just to make the deal happen. So anyway, just wanted to answer those questions. If you guys have any questions you want me to feature on a show, go to flipempire.com and click on the Ask Alex link at the top. And listen, I would love it. It really, I don't think you guys understand how much I value you listening. And it really, really helps the ranking in iTunes if you guys could leave a 5-star rating and review. So I don't think I've ever revealed this particular URL, but if you go to flipempire.com/iTunes, all you got to do is click on the view in iTunes, and then you could leave a rating and review. So right now we have 71 5-star ratings. They're all 5 stars, which is awesome. And I want to get to 100 within the next couple of months here if possible. So help me get there. I would really, really, really appreciate you guys. And that's all I got for you here. But make sure to tune in to this upcoming masterclass. Talk to you soon.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.